RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
As a cardiologist and a chef, Dr. Michael Fenster has combined his culinary talents with cutting-edge medical expertise and insight. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Wood Nation. You are listening to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike. I am Dr. Mike. And hey, don't forget to head over to www.cardiochef.com. Subscribe to the newsletter. You can find out what's happening on the show before the show actually airs. Get those recipes, check things out, find out what I'm up to. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at WCWD and on Facebook at What's Cooking with Doc. Hey, today I'm very excited because we're going to talk some sheep, and I mean literally some sheep. So my guest today is an amazing artisan crafting what is one of my favorite foods on the planet, and that is cheeses. So I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Allison from Tucker Family Farms, crafter, artist, working with these incredible variety of absolutely delicious and unique sheep cheeses. So Allison, thanks so much for taking time out today to be on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So the first thing I have to ask you, and I know our audience is going to want to know, how did a nice girl from Manhattan wind up in Western Montana making cheese?
Yeah, it is a crazy story. I was working for a shipping company, working in international shipping out on the East Coast, living in Manhattan, and then they moved me out to Vancouver to do the same thing. And when I quit that job to take some like personal time, I drove from Vancouver back to the East Coast, and I was passing through Montana, and I just found it so gorgeous, and I wanted to come back and spend some more time there. And so I got a wolfing job, the Worldwide Opportunity for Organic Farming internship for a month milking sheep at the Tucker Family Farm. And we started milking less and less, and so I started spending all my free time and days off learning how to make cheese. And then, coincidentally, the current cheesemaker at the time got married to someone in Denmark and moved back to Denmark. And he had been teaching me how to make all the cheeses, and we transitioned to like an apprenticeship program, and I learned how to make all the cheeses, and I've been making them all at the farm ever since.
And I must add, from personal experience and personal, you make them quite deliciously.
Thank you very much.
Now, is cheese something that's always been a passion for you, or is this something that developed kind of while you were interested in working at Tucker Family Farms?
It had always been an interest of mine. I think my sister and I had always kind of, if the world was up to us, that might be something we'd like to do. Is she'd like to have a farm and we could make cheese, or, you know, live out in the country. It's something we had always talked about, but had never kind of become a reality. But when I had quit my job and was kind of on a leave of absence, all of a sudden you have time to pursue something like that. And so I ended up at the best place I could have, and the opportunity to learn type of way, as well as the Tuckers were just raising amazing sheep in a really humane, lovely way. So it was a perfect, somehow I was just really lucky to find that place that matched up with something I'd always been interested in.
And I think that's very, very important is, you know, it's not just, you know, getting the milk, but being connected to the earth and the plants that the sheep eat, how they're raised, how they feel. All those have big impacts, you know, into the ultimate product, into the ultimate cheese that you craft. So tell us a little bit about how you and the Tuckers run things on the farm, because that very holistic approach, I think, is so important in defining the flavors, the characteristics, the terroir of food, like wines, like cheeses, things that are so very much alive.
Yeah, so all the credit for that goes to Tyler, the owner and the farmer, who puts in a lot of hard work making sure that the sheep are happy and healthy. The number one thing is that they're pasture-raised, grass-fed, always. They get a little bit of grain to cook them into the parlor. And then, you know, just the little things, from giving them organic apple cider vinegar in their water, to making sure they have you know, fields and fields of pasture, of green space for them to eat, and are using or only organic alfalfa when in the winter there's not, you know, being in Montana, we don't have green pasture all year round. So it's all these little things that he dedicates himself to, just raising happy and healthy sheep, hardly ever using antibiotics, only in the really rare cases when there's, you know, no other option. And then obviously those sheep aren't milked for quite a time. Just raising a really nice herd. He works very hard at that.
Now, you just mentioned something that's very interesting. So help enlighten me a little bit. What does adding the apple cider vinegar to the water do for the sheep?
Yeah, it's the same stuff it does for us. You know, it's good digestive health and just keeps them healthy. There's a kind of like a wives' tale that if you have the moms drink apple cider vinegar, they'll have more female babies. And so I think we believe that a little bit as well.
A little magical elixir there, but that, exactly. But what you point out is very true, and I've done a little bit of research on that for humans, and one of the things that folks should know is that real cider is sort of, again, one of these living fermented type of foods in that category. And so if they buy something that's, you know, heat treated, pasteurized to a high degree, has other additives in it to increase the shelf life, that's a very different product than the natural type of apple cider. And so I take it that's kind of what you're using is the same thing that people use.
Exactly. Yeah. Like we use it also to cook with on the farm. Exactly what we eat.
And one of the other things I think is great about your operation is that there's a sort of a circle of life, a very holistic approach. So nothing really goes to waste. When you make the cheeses, and I'm going to ask you to kind of walk us through that process in a minute, some of what somebody might consider, well, a waste product of the cheeses actually goes to the heritage breed Berkshires that you guys keep on there. Did I get that right when we were visiting the other day?
Absolutely. We collect every drop of whey, even the whey that drips just kind of underneath the spigot where the whey comes out. We collect as much of it as I can because it's absolutely, it's beef for our animals. We can make other cheeses out of it as well. We can bake with it. We can make rice with it. There's lots of options of what to do with that whey.
And what's very interesting about whey is people don't realize it's a slightly acidic, much like the apple cider vinegar you're talking about, a very alive, very protein-rich drink. And in the times of Vikings, because I've got a new book coming out, Ancient Eats, and one of the chapters is on the Vikings, and they were into cattle and into cheeses and butters and so forth and using the milk products. And they actually used whey as a natural preservative to ferment some foods to prolong it, because much like Montana, I think that, you know, the winters in the Scandinavian countries can be a little rough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we also do fermentation of our vegetables with it as well. You're 100% right.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So you guys have grow vegetables on there as well, and then you'll ferment them in whey. And that's actually, as I said, a very Viking technique. So I don't know if Tucker or you has sort of Nordic lineages, but you're really touching your roots, touching back to Scandinavia and that area back in time, if you do. And I think that's, you know, absolutely great. And my question is, when you preserve some vegetables in something like whey, does it add a certain flavor to it or give it a certain flavor profile?
Absolutely. Our sheep's milk is naturally sweeter than cow's milk, and so in whey is also very sweet and sugary. There's definitely a lot of sweetness, I think, that goes into it.
And speaking of the sheep's milk, so the sheep are out, they're grazing, they're happy pasture land. They're eating all these yummy things that are growing wild in the pasture. You've got the milk. Walk us through a little bit of the steps of what you do, because I was so impressed with your operation, and I've got to say I was really humbled, because, you know, I take a little pride. I make some homemade ricotta, I made some mozzarella, and I was just in awe of the cheeses that you make, and actually probably a little bummed out with just making mozzarella and ricotta when I left.
Yeah, having a big facility or a really nicely designed plant like we have kind of opens us up to make almost, I mean, literally any cheese that we want. And the really exciting part of cheese making for me is that it's five basic steps that you follow every single time that gives you a hugely different result. So you, with the same milk in this, you know, variety of cultures, you can get anything from a really, really hard Italian grating cheese to a super soft triple cream. And that's so exciting for me as a cheesemaker. We get to explore a lot of that in our production.
So what are the steps and what are, where are the steps and where are the things that, you know, differentiate, like you said, a hard Italian style grating cheese from, you know, a soft Roquefort type blue? I mean, the cheeses are so different, yet you're saying it's five steps for all these cheeses. That's just fascinating.
So yeah, basically, you know, you have milk, you heat the milk or cool the milk to the temperature that the cheese requires. And that's going to be the first thing that really makes a variance in the end product. So a really dry cheese will have a higher temperature milk and curd. And then you add the cultures. And so the cultures is kind of like your herbs when you're cooking, spices, for example. And so different cultures and molds will start to give you some variation. Blue cheese or brie cheese that has like a nice bloomy rind is going to have different molds, like a Penicillium candidum or Penicillium roqueforti. And then your cultures can give you different flavor textures, etc. After the cultures is the coagulant, which makes it kind of just like a big milk piece of jello. And once you have a firm set, you can start cutting.
So do you ever do milk shots then? That's what I got to know.
We don't, but it's not a terrible idea. Then after you have a firm set, you start cutting the curd. And then at that point, it's another opportunity to create variation in the cheese that you're making. A bigger curd will give you a moister cheese. A really small curd will give you a drier, harder cheese. And then you can also treat the curd at that point, whether you heat it or you wash the curd or how you mill the curd. How you treat the curd is the next step. And then you mold it into whatever size or shape you're looking for. A lot of cheeses kind of have a classic shape or size with them. But when you start making your own cheeses that are nothing like already exist, you kind of have free range to do what you want.
And so if you don't mind sharing with the folks, what are some of the cheeses that you guys make, and what are some of your personal favorites?
Yeah, so we have like a core collection. We have a brie, a blue that's a nice moldy rind. It kind of looks like a rock, is what a lot of kids at the farmer's market tell me. Those are semi-soft cheeses. And then we've done a lot with fresh cheeses this summer, and the timing on that feels pretty right. It's 95 degrees or so here in Montana. So those people are appreciating these fresh cheeses like feta, ricotta. We kind of came up with our own Chev-like cheese, but obviously not Chev because it's sheep milk. And so we just kind of named that our own name and kind of keeping it as like a classic Tucker Family Farm cheese. And then for hard cheeses, we have Italian grating cheese that we're really excited about. We're aging it up to 12 months. It's right around 9 to 10 months. We like it to be a little bit older. And we have a beer wash cheese. We use a local beer from Draftworks Brewery, a really beautifully colored oatmeal stout, which gives the rinds a really, really nice color.
And, you know, what I think one of the things that I love about your cheese, your feta, and for folks out there shopping, next time you're looking for feta and you see these, you know, crumbles, a sort of tasteless, very bland crumbles in a box, you'll look down and you'll see that it's actually milk. But real feta, you know, if you were to go to Greece, they wouldn't consider it feta unless it was either sheep's milk, you know, or goat's milk. And that really gives it a different flavor and a different texture and is comparable, you know, what I've had the good fortune of experiencing, you know, on several of my visits to Crete. And the different milks, I think, really make a difference you know, in the flavors, and also the way that you raise these animals. And some studies have been done, and what we find is that the cheeses and the products that come out from your methods of doing this are much higher in the very beneficial anti-inflammatory omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids. Those are the things that are associated with reductions in diseases like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, etc., and also a lower omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, much higher in very beneficial fats like conjugated linoleic acid. But the most important thing is they just have a sublime flavor that just speaks to, you know, that area, your terroir. And something you and I were talking the other day that I thought was just amazing, just really hit me because it sounded, you know, like you were crafting wine, is that a cheese that you make in the spring might be different from a cheese that you make at the end of milking season or that you're crafting in the fall. And I'd just love if you would comment a little bit on that.
Absolutely. So a few things will affect it. I think the two biggest are the fat content. In the beginning of the year, there's a lot of milk, but it has a lower butterfat content. Sheep's milk is still has about double the butterfat content of cow's milk, but sheep's milk itself varies throughout the year. So when we come to October, we'll have, you know, half the milk, but still get the same or close to the same amount of curd. So just, it has a much fattier content, which affects the flavor. And also what they eat. In the milk in the spring, they've been eating more hay, whereas throughout the year, they're pasture-raised, and so they're eating more and more grass. And just the fluctuations in what they're eating absolutely affects the milk. And a lot of people, like wine, people can really go in depth a lot of like what they can taste the notes of the different pastures and or alfalfa that they're eating in the spring versus the like late fall. Yeah, and the other thing I'm really excited about as a new cheesemaker is I get to experiment with new cheeses. So our first limited release that we did this spring, like we're talking about, we have that spring milk, and we made a really nice light, only aged 2 months in our cave cheese, which was a nice, accessible cheese, kind of a nice way to start off the spring. And then now that we're here in the summer, I'm doing kind of more an adventurous cheese. It's like a cheddar. It's a Welsh-style cheese called Caerphilly. But the difference is how we age it, and it's going to be very reflective of our cave. We have it in our caves now.
Well, 10-4, sorry, Allison, I
no
dropped
problem.
Out there. I know that was very discourteous of me, but I had to go check. I had to go grab a little sample of the cheese there. So you're making me so hungry. So one thing that I wanted to ask you is, what is one of your favorite cheeses?
Yeah, my favorite is the newest one I'm working on. It's a Welsh style Caerphilly cheese, and it's this kind of a few cheeses combined in one. It's the style of it is that, you know, UK cheddared crumbly cheese, but then how we age it kind of turns it into like almost a brie-like texture around the rind and outside. And then another difference is that towards the end of its life, we will rub it in rice flour, which will give its rind a whole different texture and look to it. So we're really excited about that one. We have I guess it'll be ready September 19th, and so I've got a little bit more time of watching it and taking care of it. But we're pretty excited to see how that one turns out.
And one thing I want to add for folks is that what studies and data have shown is that the cheese that you make, this fermented living real product, is actually really, really helpful for us. So you get to enjoy the flavor and the fat. And Allison, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Folks, you want to check out Tucker Family Farms Cheeses. You are listening to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.